Welcome into the KSRO kitchen. I'm Steve Garner, and welcoming back after his whirlwind tour of many port of calls is Chef John Ash.
Well, it's great to be back. And part of that was the KSRO cruise, which was totally wonderful. We started in Lisbon and ended up in Barcelona with many colorful stops along the way, Mallorca, and then over to France, to Marseille, and Monaco, and all of that. So with a whole gang of KSRO listeners.
So it was fun aboard the cruise ship?
Yeah.
What cruise line was this?
This is Oceania.
Oh, yeah.
And the wonderful thing about Oceania is it's the only, I think, the only cruise line that has a cooking school on board that has stations for people to cook with their own hands.
Oh, you know? Just like not a real cooking school.
Exactly. Yeah, it's really, and it's kind of Jacques Pepin's. It was his dream to have something like that. So of course, there's a Jacques Pepin is everywhere, not in person, but represented and all of that stuff. But it was a great fun. So I did a couple of cooking classes on board for the KSRO group,
That's
which
so
was
wonderful.
Great.
Yeah, how fun. Much fun.
It was great fun, and they had, it's something a little bit different, because how many buffets and bars can you go to and all of that stuff?
You burn out eventually.
And the ship itself was really beautiful.
So welcome back.
Thank you.
From your cruise and extended holiday. And before you left back in early September, you started on a brand new venture, hooking up with the Press Democrat, a local newspaper here in Sonoma County, to write a semi-regular feature in the paper.
Well, I think it's regular. Not weekly.
Yes, right. And the first one debuted on September 5th. It was called Simply Delicious Fruit Dessert Favorites from Chef John Ash. And that's where you dove into the world of grunts and all kinds
of slumps and grunts. Cobblers and
all cobblers. That. Yeah. It's wonderful seasonal summer fruits. Then the next one was followed up. I'm looking at this one from September the 19th, and this is really important because it's the taste of Spain, and you just recently returned from Spain.
I know. I wish I would have gone to Spain first and then come back. I would, but it's a fun article about the small plates of Spain and also the small plates of Portugal, which are interesting in of themselves. And Spain, you know, is a multifaceted country. And so in the north of Spain, up in the Basque country, they don't call them tapas as much as calling them pinxtos, there's a whole story, I think it's probably apocryphal, that about sticking a skewer in them or something like that, which differentiates them. But the bars there were just amazing. You'd walk into them, and the whole bar would be covered with all of this amazing, amazing, amazing food. And the place that was the real highlight, I ended up spending about a week there, was San Sebastian. San Sebastian's in the very north, up in the Basque country, up near the mountains, and it's really, it's an absolutely gorgeous colonial city, but the food scene there is not to be believed. And the other part of it that I really liked, I have to say that being a wine lover, in that part of the world, you can get lots of wine for not very much money, which is fantastic.
So that's the September 19th column, John's column on the taste of Spain. And I remember 25 years ago or so when you first went to Spain in the mid-90s and how exhilarated you were when you came back on the show, just that you fell in love with all the food and culture.
Well, part of it is, I don't mean to put us down, but, you know, we think we're the center of the universe with all things food and all of that stuff. We're not. You know, the food scenes there are so gorgeous and so varied and so much fun, you know, so we have a lot to learn.
If you want to swing by the PD, you can get past issues of the Press Democrat, the September 5th and the September 19th, if you want to reference John's recipes from those first two columns. Now, you have a third feature coming out next week.
Next week, yeah. Just in time, huh?
What's that going to be about?
It's about Day of the Dead and the food of Day of the Dead and all of that, which is, you know, I've spent a bit of time down in Oaxaca, which is most famous for Day of the Dead celebrations, which kind of corresponds to our Halloween, you know, that, but it's not scary. You know, Halloween for us is about scaring people and all that stuff. And there it's not. It's about honoring those who have passed on and welcoming them back. And the most amazing things are served. Every home, if they can, builds an altar and has favorite foods of the departed there. Often they also gather in cemeteries near the graves and have a big spread and lots of drink and lots of food and all of that stuff. So it's kind of a joyous thing with, of course, that wonderful Day of the Dead art.
Do you have a couple of recipes off the top of your head that you might be featuring, that you are going to be featuring next Wednesday?
Yeah. Well, we're doing a Campuchavo, it's called, which is kind of the homemade version of Mexican hot chocolate, but it's nice. Made with masa and chocolate and a little bit of milk and water and sugar and cinnamon and all of this, drunk hot, and it's really, it's a very simple recipe and I think really delicious. So you'd have a big mug of that while you're sitting graveside honoring your past ones. So that's a good one. And then I did one of my favorite things, which is can be used for as is, or in tacos, or in tamales, and all of that stuff, which is a slow-cooked kind of pork roast that you can then shred and do all kinds of things with. That's cooked with lots of chilies and lots of spice and all of that stuff.
Wonderful.
So it's really good, yeah.
And I know there's color photos accompanying that
there
feature
are,
next
there
Wednesday.
There are some, yeah. Yes.
So look for that in the next Wednesday's Press Democrat, John Ash's salute to Day of the Dead and the cooking of Oaxaca.
And a bit of history of Day of the Dead and kind of what goes on during that time. So it's fascinating. If you haven't, it's one of those things that should be on everybody's bucket list, and that is to go down, especially to Oaxaca in southern Mexico, and celebrate Day of the Dead. People just, you know, they dress up in these kind of ghoulish ways, but in a kind of happy way. And of course, drink the most copious amounts of mezcal, which puts them in another world. You know, that's the thing. They're kind of meeting their departed halfway, I think.
We'll meet Dr. Ali Bazzari when we come back. You might have missed his previous appearance, October 2016. Way overdue for a return visit to us. Steve Garner and Chef John Ash in the KSRO kitchen.
Here's FM News Talk KSRO on Crystal Clear FM at 94.5.
Hey folks, this is George Adair from Bay Equity Home Loans. We're your local lender, but I want you to know we have cutting-edge technology available to you. I'm really excited to announce our Bay Equity Express closing. You don't have to go search the internet to find your home loan lender. We're right here in Santa Rosa, Petaluma, and Windsor. Bay Equity Home Loans offers many loan programs with amazing technology. At closing, you can digitally sign your loan documents. It saves time, saves frustration, and we get to the closing process so much faster. If you're buying in Sonoma County, the speed to close is one of the most important factors in getting your offer accepted. The reputation of Bay Equity locally is amongst the best. Visit us at bayequityloans.com or call 707-583-8100. Again, 707-583-8100. Bay Equity is your home for loans.
Equal housing lender, subject to credit approval. NMLS ID 76988. The transaction will be made pursuant to the Department of Business Oversight California Finance Lender Law and or California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. NMLS ID 245370.
I was up all night with Justin again. Kids with autism keep the craziest hours. I don't think I've had a full night's sleep since he was born.
Caring for a child with challenges like autism or Down syndrome can drain your resources.
Tom's already working two jobs trying to keep up with all the medical bills. It never ends. I wish I could help, but taking care of Justin is a full-time job.
You could be eligible for federal and state benefits that will pay you up to $4,000 a month.
What do I have to do to get that kind of help?
Contact Galt Advocacy.
Is Galt Advocacy a law firm?
No, an advocacy group. They connect people with disabilities to benefit programs, advocate for those denied services, and even help you get paid as a caregiver for your own child.
How do I find them?
Their website is galtadvocacy.com. There's no upfront cost, and the consultation is free.
Let me write that down.
GALTadvocacy.com.
Thanks.
Galt Advocacy. When you take a stand, you won't stand alone. galtadvocacy.com.
Start your stay with a complimentary glass of wine by the fireplace. Stroll through the quaint downtown and end your evening in a romantic room in a Victorian house. It's Carter House Inns in Eureka on mysonomadeals.com. Get a really nice queen room for $75, regular $215. While you're there, visit the zoo, Humboldt Bay, or do absolutely nothing. Mysonomadeals.com. Click Carter House Inns for just $75. Also check out other great deals like 256 North Restaurant in Petaluma. MySonomaDeals.com.
Here's something good for your soul Sunday mornings with the Center for Spiritual Living. Tune in at 8:30 and hear a half-hour message of practical spirituality from Edward Philune. You'll hear spiritual practices translated into inspirational ideas for everyday living. Spiritual Living with Edward Philune, Sunday mornings at 8:30. Think of it as spirituality for people who don't like church. That's Spiritual Living with Edward Philune, brought to you every Sunday morning at 8:30 on News Talk 1350 KSRO.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
Want to welcome back after a two-year absence, Dr. Ali Bazzari. Welcome back.
Thank you.
We had you on a couple of years ago for the debut of your first cookbook, Ingredient, which was just a wild ride.
Yeah.
We loved that.
Can I mention, because we were talking before we came on the air, can you talk, because you know a lot about Spain. You lived there?
Yeah, I lived there. I went and did a very unorthodox exchange program when I was in college. Rather than going out and having a host family and stuff, since I was doing science, there isn't as much infrastructure for studying abroad when you're in biochem. So they basically said, sure, go to this university in Madrid and walk into the registrar's office and enroll in some classes. So I went and lived there for a year, and I was trying to really understand and get deeply dug into what it meant to live in Spain. So I didn't really leave the country. I didn't do the thing that a lot of people do of trying to hit everywhere in Europe mm-hmm. over the course of a few months. And so I got to get really into the weird, woolly, the back roads of Spain and see a lot of stuff off the beaten path.
And you obviously spoke Spanish or learned to speak Spanish.
Yes. Yeah. So my mom is a linguist. She just kind of collects languages like a hobby. And so she was a English as a second language teacher for a while. And so I grew up, one of the languages that we had in our house was Spanish. And, it was really funny after coming back from Madrid, I picked up a very Castilian Iberian accent and my mom sounds very Northern Mexican. So when we talk together in public, it is often very confusing to watch. Like, why do these people know? Why are they talking like that?
Can you understand each other though?
Totally. Absolutely. Yeah. We just kind of rib each other for our now very characteristic.
Well, accents. And the other thing that you told me that we'll get into what we should get into. My favorite city of all in Spain was San Sebastian, and you had a great experience there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously all the food, but then that part of the north coast of Spain. Is a low-key surf mecca, and it's very cold water, similar to the Pacific. There's gratefully far less sharks, and it's not very very overly traveled for surfing. So I went and did like a 10-day intensive course where we lived in tents on the beach and surfed in the mornings, and then went and explored fun, tasty things in the evening.
Ah, to be young again.
Yeah.
These great things. So you are a doctor of biochemistry.
Indeed.
You co-founded R&D Research, was it?
Yeah, Pilot R&D. Pilot R&D. Research and Development.
And what exactly is that?
It's a consulting firm. So it's me and my co-founders, Dan Felder, Dana Peck, and Kyle Connaughton.
From Single Thread Restaurant.
Exactly. So we all come from that really weird world of the handful of restaurants out there that can afford to have dedicated R&D programs. And we brought that combined expertise to the world of retail food. So now Pilot, with the creativity from that chefy side of our experience, and a lot of the insight from the science side of our brains, we help food and beverage companies, like bottled cold brew coffee and working on crispy snacks and cookies and soups and all the stuff that you see in a grocery store, basically trying to undo all the weird stuff that we did to food in the 50s.
The wave of the future.
The wave of the future. Putting real food back on retail shelves with chef's expertise.
Well, when you say weird food, and it was because we got so into non-food.
We got so hung up on consistency and homogeneity that, we joke a fair bit internally that for a long time in the middle of the 1900s, manufacturing facilities around the country were all just making the same saltine cracker and putting it into different colored boxes for different companies. And now you see this explosion in the natural organic food world in retail and the stuff you get in grocery stores that, I don't know, in the past 5 years, you've seen a number of new products, new, exciting, tasty, real foods that have come onto the market that is equal in numbers to what you had during the 60s, like the entire decade in the past couple of years.
Remarkable.
Yeah.
You've after the book came out, Ingredient, mm-hmm. The Chronicle did a couple things back in 2016. And one of those was called Crispiness. And you focused on how do you get things crispy. It's mm-hmm. a wonderful article. And you featured a restaurant called Local, L-O-C-O-L.
Yeah.
Tell us about your experience with Local and what they actually did with their tacos.
So Local is a cool story. It's a couple of really fantastic chefs who wanted to invest some of their expertise and some of their understanding of how to run a delicious restaurant into, honestly, the same kind of areas where people would typically become embroiled in, like McDonald's as a franchise. And the big, big chain fast food where there's not a lot of cooking, there's not a lot of learned skills, there's not a lot of great tasting food. And so I wasn't involved in that project. I was just an admirer of what they were doing. And so they basically made like really great food along the lines of what you would see in fast food chains, but made with better quality ingredients, made by people who are understanding more of the joy of actually cooking that food and doing it in the ways that you would see in a lot of really great restaurants. And so, yeah, Local was one of the examples. And the premise of that article was basically crispiness doesn't care how many Michelin stars you have. It was one of the realizations that underpinned wanting to write the book in the first place. I was teaching at CIA over in St. Helena, and I was consulting for people like Thomas Keller. And it was this amazing realization that whether or not you are one of the elite chefs in the world, or you are just starting your first day of learning how to manipulate a stove, the fundamental way of the universe that guides things becoming crispy is the same. So with Local or with a 3 Michelin star restaurant, both are churning out amazing food. And what's cool is the crispiness. You put anything in your mouth that crunches, that crispiness comes about from the same fundamental rules of how physics and chemistry work in your food.
And that is removing moisture, because you also referenced kimchi glass, a very unusual preparation served at the restaurant Bennu in mm-hmm. San Francisco. And how did they attain crispiness in that dish?
I mean, with a dehydrator. It's one of those things where, I mean, it sounds silly, but whether or not you're opening a bag of chips on a road trip at 12 a.m. trying to get from Fresno to Berkeley, or you are dining at one of these palaces of cuisine, the crispiness arrived to your mouth by the same route, which is just removing water and adding carbs and protein and sugar to help lock things up on a molecular level and make things ready for the crispiness.
And the column is called Homemade.
Oh, so that's a new project that we're working on with the Chronicle. It's called Housemade.
Housemade. That started this year.
That started this year. Yep. That was I pitched this to Paolo, who has really put together an incredible food section at the Chronicle right now. I said I kind of want an antidote to restaurant reviews. Restaurant reviews are starting to feel a little bit like, at least the way that they had been done, a little bit of something of the past, where somebody coming in and hemming and hawing mm-hmm. for 1,000 words over whether or not the lavender was overwhelmed in the canapé I don't know. It's something a bit out of step with the times about that. So rather than spending 1,000 words on whether or not I thought the food was good, I wanted to pitch a column where the foregone conclusion at the beginning of these articles is the food is good. Food is better in restaurants right now than it ever has been. So why don't we go around to the restaurants that that people love, where chefs are doing incredible things, and spend like 1,500 words talking about how the food got to be so good. So talking about the silent science behind the scenes, talking about all of the inspiration and brilliance of the chefs, and really talking about all of the hard work that the 3 days of labor that go into a delicious steam bun that kind of vanish as soon as that that dish is handed to you and you eat it in 3 bites. Mm.
Well, the debut column, I think, was Duna, yes, restaurant in San Francisco. And you, yes, talked about how they make their own cola,
mm-hmm,
Duna cola, and also how they make their own smoked potato flatbread,
mm-hmm,
which was wild. Can you succinctly describe both, yeah, of those processes?
Well, so the cola thing was interesting because, again, it's a soft drink. It's something that you're used to just mindlessly pulling out of a soda fountain. At Duna, what the chef there, Nick Ballo, was doing was very alchemical. I mean, it felt like very ancient Eastern European kind of alchemy. He was layering shades of darkness into this beverage. And what I mean by that is there is a depth of caramely, nutty roastiness that you get from cola, right? It's usually coming from caramel coloring. Yeah. Old school, the genesis of cola was taking things like molasses and dates and sugary substances that had gotten dark through time, just like aged balsamic vinegar or whatever. And so Nick, I joke that all of his food tastes like it's on 11. Nick completely packs more density of taste and aroma into food than most people are used to having. So he took that darkness idea, that dark flavor profile, to its extreme, where almost everything that went into the cola was dark. It was dried, long dried apples and cherries. It was blackened limes, which are these really, really long dried and slightly fermented whole limes. And there was molasses from a bunch of different sources. Basically, he created this black hole and then gave you the balance to be lifted out of that black hole with a ton of different kinds of acid and spice. So there was cardamom, there was cloves, there was all of these really fragrant aromatic spices. And then there was acid from like 4 different kinds of citrus and different kinds of vinegar, and just constantly tinkering with creating this really cool push-pull of dark, profound, robust.
And you're talking about all things that are natural.
All
not,
things that
not,
are, I mean,
not that are concocted in a,
yeah,
lab.
And nothing, yeah, against, yeah. I mean, not trying to be puritanical, yeah, of I don't want chemicals in my food. Yeah. It's just that when you use a slowly dehydrated apple, mm-hmm, as the base for your soda, there's just more there. There's more information. There's more peaks and valleys of flavor that you get to have. And what's amazing is, I mean, I've been talking about this for now 3 minutes. It's a cola. This is like one of the drinks on their menu. And that was the whole crux of the column, is there is so much that diners are missing unless a documentary gets made about your favorite restaurant. There's so much in between the lines that if you love food, it's cool to know about. And so this is a column dedicated to unveiling that.
So just to follow up a little, mm-hmm, bit more, mm-hmm, on that, can the average, yeah, Joe appreciate that, those differences?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you pick somebody off the street and sort of said, here's a commercially made cola and here's this one.
Oh, yeah. There are a lot of things out there. Like when I always laugh when I hear people wax poetic about like different single origin coffees, uh-huh, and how, yeah, uh-huh, like that probably would take some training. I think that you're kidding yourself if you say that somebody who doesn't really pay attention to coffee for more than rocket fuel,
yeah,
is really going to,
yeah,
pick up on,
yeah,
that. But one of the reasons that these restaurants are popular is that it's just a different level. It is major league versus minor league types of cooking. And yes, you can tell the differences between all of the sweat that these chefs are putting into their food And it is sweat and it's hard work and it's brilliance that I was really excited to recognize and show people.
Dr. Ali Bazzari is our guest, Chef John Ash and Steve Garner in the Chaos Arto Kitchen. It's been a couple of years since Ali joined us live in the studio, and we're thrilled to have him back. We'll tackle a little bit of the alchemy from Mr. Jew's restaurant in San Francisco. Also, Miss Ollie's and her famous fried chicken when we come back. And help my pronunciation, is it Liholiho?
Liholiho.
Liholiho Yacht Club in San Francisco. Those are three of your housemaid columns from the Chronicle. And then we'll certainly jump into the summer edition of Savour Magazine, which features you in full regalia diving off the coasts of Sonoma and Mendocino. Back after this.
Join the switch to crystal clear KSRO-FM, 103.5 Santa Rosa, Windsor, 94.5 Petaluma. Hear the difference.
The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market has lots of winter vegetables, nuts, cheese, and meat from your favorite farmers and ranchers. Don't miss Saturday, October 27th, Harvest Festival pumpkins and sugar skulls to decorate for the kids. The Beet Generation will be barrel roasting Romano beans and peppers. Aroma Florals of Petaluma has beautiful fall, pepper, and lavender wreaths. Enjoy the fall harvest at the market with guest chefs cooking demos. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market has artisan foods ranging from fabulous bread, olive oils, marinades, tea blends, to seafood and pastas. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market open year-round, Saturdays 8:30 a.m. till 1 p.m. at the Luther Burbank Center for the Arts. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun.
I'm Nick Sobolewski, a SelectQuote agent with a true story that could save you hundreds of dollars a year. A woman named Linda just called. Her husband, Ray, has a $300,000 group life insurance policy, but is changing jobs and can't take it with him. Well, I shopped the many highly rated term life insurance companies we represent and found Ray, who is 41 and takes medication to control his cholesterol, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for under $27 a month. That's almost twice the coverage for less than half of what he had paid. If SelectQuote hasn't shopped for your life insurance, you're probably paying too much.
For your free quote, call 800-445-6363. That's 800-445-6363. 800-445-6363. Or go to SelectQuote.com. Since 1985, we shop, you save.
Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
Every moment is just for you at Graton Resort and Casino. Go all in on exciting gaming action or celebrate and explore 12 great restaurants, 6 bars and lounges, nightly entertainment, and more. It's your moment right in the heart of Sonoma wine country. Staycation in luxury, from our beautiful rooms to our world-class spa and fabulous pool with cabanas. Book your stay today at GraytonResortCasino.com. Your moment awaits. See you there.
After last year's devastating fires, we've all been caring for our families, our neighbors, and our community. But too often, we overlook one very important thing: recovering our peace of mind. Go to MySonomaStrong.com for a free online wellness self-assessment. While you're there, you can learn about free programs, including restorative yoga classes and children's programs, to private counseling in person, by phone, or even by text. Let's find our new normal together. Visit MySonomaStrong.com today.
Sonoma County's most accurate, dependable forecast with KSRO's Daniel Trucios.
Clouds coming and going for the weekend today at 75 degrees, 64 on the coast. A bit cloudy tonight, low 55, 56 on the shores. Still a few clouds for Sunday at 72, 64 in Bodega Bay. Should be a bit clearer for Monday at 74, 66 on the coastline. Depend on weather every 30 minutes on FM News Talk 103.5 and 94.5 KSRO.
Steve Garner and Chef John Ash in the Chaos Arto Kitchen celebrating our 32nd year and our second visit with Dr. Ali Bazzari. chemist, biochemist extraordinary, and he writes a new column for the Chronicle called Housemaid. His first book was Ingredient. It came out a couple of years ago, and we're looking at some of the contents of several of those past columns that you've written. How about Mr. Jew's restaurant in San Francisco? What attracted you to what they're doing, what Brandon Jew is doing?
Honestly, it was a restaurant review that had been written about Mr. Jew's, where basically the author said that he really enjoyed the food. That this is a star, a new star on the San Francisco dining map, and loved everything about it. But then there was this one bit at the end where there was a parting shot of, but I'm not sure that Chef Jew has mastered Chinese cooking yet. Which is very strange for a Chinese American man who has a very successful restaurant with Chinese influence. So I had a conversation with Brandon, and I basically said, "You guys do incredible stuff. Your food is the kind of food that I want to eat all the time. It's not overwrought. It's not fussy. It's craveably, stupidly delicious in a way that's still elegant. And I want to write about how you do what you do. And so." That article turned into looking at a bunch of dishes. Some of them, like their sizzling rice soup, mm-hmm. was a direct motif pulled from his childhood at this very, very pageantry-ridden Chinese banquet food. And I just kind of wanted to take a shot at the notion of authenticity. And if when we talk about authenticity in food, we're usually comparing a dish to some canonical archetype, some gold standard, mm-hmm. which is really weird because food and cooking for people is this constantly evolving dynamic thing. And we wanted to get into, first of all, how a few of the dishes at Mr. Jew's works, but also to say if a chef is making these decisions and choosing to sear this or simmer that or to serve a perfectly clear broth versus something that's a little bit more chowdery, if those are the decisions that are their creative license, why are we talking about what somebody may have done in a classical Chinese restaurant in the 1940s in Manhattan? And why does that have to have a bearing on whether or not food is good? So that was kind of the jumping off point for Mr. Jew's.
That was the, and also besides the sizzling rice soup, frozen whipped honey?
Oh my God. Melissa Chu is their pastry chef. I joked in that article that, I mean, she could submit that dish for like a graduate degree in crystallization. It is one of the most delicious. It's on the surface, it's frozen whipped honey. So there's like a pineapple sorbet. There's like a really cool milky jelly, and there's this whipped honey. It's a great sorbet dessert when you boil it down to it. But there are so many different things going on. She masters so many different textures. It's mind blowing. It is a symphony of crispy, creamy, crystally. All in one dish that just kind of, again, it gets dropped at your table and they say, here's a frozen whipped honey dessert. And there's nothing wrong with that. You can enjoy it, but I kind of want it like this to me is a painting that should be hung in a museum. So I wanted to create like an audio guided tour in the form of this column.
From San Francisco's Mr. Jew's, what drew you to Miss Ollie's restaurant in Oakland? Here we go from Asian to Caribbean inspired.
Yes. But you have to have a surname. Yes, no.
Yeah. So the chef at Miss Ollie's is Sarah Kiernan. Miss Ollie is referring to her grandmother who taught her a lot of these ideas. So there, I got recommended to go check out what Sarah was doing by almost every chef friend of mine. that is a chef's restaurant where she's cooking basically Caribbean deep cuts, goat stew, fried chicken, a bunch of really incredible iterations on plantains. And that was another thing where this is not a Michelin-starred restaurant. This is not an expensive restaurant. This is not a fancy restaurant. I mean, a lot of the times you can order at the counter and eat with very plain utensils and just enjoy some good fried chicken. But what I wanted to get across was there's nothing less interesting or less worthy of being studied and unpacked about incredible fried chicken cooked in a cast iron skillet than there is something that takes 30 cooks in white chef coats 4 days to put together. And that was the idea. We dove into plantains and stew and fried chicken, and there is no less science and inspiration and nuance and brilliance that goes into food like that than this other food that's typically glorified.
So what made her fried chicken stellar?
So she takes a really interesting approach to marinating the meat. So she brines it, which a lot of chefs do. But then rather than, I'm sure you've seen where people will stuff herbs and butter and things under the skin, rather than do that and put water right next to what will eventually be crispy and therefore jeopardize your crispiness, she slashes the meat to the bone and stuffs this salty, spicy paste of oregano and different herbs and scotch bonnet peppers between the meat and the bone so that the marinade is kept at arm's length from the dry, crispy skin, but you still get that boost of flavor. And then also, it's incredible that this is one of the most talked about fried chickens in the Bay Area and sometimes in the nation at large, and it is very secretly gluten-free. Not because Sarah is trying to cater to the gluten-free public or because of any sort of anything, apart from the fact that gluten-free flour browns slower. There's less protein in it, that there's less fuel to turn it golden brown. So she is afforded a little bit more time in the fryer to really dehydrate and crisp that coating before it burns. And it's just, it's the most brilliant thing that is hidden behind this fried chicken dish. And I mean, I'm not saying that people in the United States don't appreciate the importance of fried chicken, but a lot of times the importance of that and other dishes that we, I think, lazily just refer to as homey, is chalked up to it's important because it's traditional.
God bless you, Ellie. You're bringing tears to my eyes, honestly, because I hold it in great reverence, great fried chicken.
And it's not just important because it's traditional. It's important because there is so much thought and nuance and elegance behind it.
So, but there's this science, which is what you're all about, that goes on there. Was she aware of this? I mean, was this the use of gluten-free flour and all of that? That was part of the conception of this dish.
Yeah, that's the cool thing. She's not a nerdy chef.
Yeah.
She's not the type who's going to put the temperature at which her egg was cooked on the menu, right? But she's making these decisions for a reason. She has very in-depth, hands-on understanding of these systems and how they work. And whether or not she's saying, oh, it's because there's less Maillard browning because of proteins interacting with reducing. Like nobody, even I don't talk like that kind of gobbledygook when I'm thinking about cooking. But she understood it in different terms. And when we were talking about this dish, my jaw just kind of dropped because she said, oh, yeah, I use like chickpea and rice flour in it because I wanted it to be really crispy. And with all of the starch and not as much protein, it takes longer to brown. So I had time before it burned. And just that simple explanation is this thing that you might miss if you just hear her talking about it because you say, ooh, gluten-free. But no, sure, it's gluten-free. That's a fringe benefit. But it just makes an incredible fried chicken. And I don't know. I think I would love to bring a more engaging conversation to why cast iron fried chicken is good, apart from it's pastoral and quaint.
We'll take a break after we grab a couple minutes with you about Liho Liho Yacht Club and what drew you to their restaurant. I know your pilot R&D worked with them on 8 iterations to try to get the bun correct for the steamed bun.
So we didn't actually work with Ravi on that one, but it is true that they did. I mean, they had their whole, they had an entire R&D effort dedicated to making their steam bun lighter, making their Spam a perfect balance of the kind of texture you'd expect from something from a can, but made with a little bit more quality ingredients.
You said Spam.
Oh, Spam. Yeah.
Okay.
And that's in itself is what drew me there is Ravi Kapoor, who's the chef there, he and his crew, they cook a lot of Hawaiian inflected food. But it was, again, it was another thing. It didn't feel touristy. It didn't feel exploitative. Obviously, that was never their intention. But a lot of times, the way we write about stuff, people say cliches. And, you know, they talk about poi and they talk about grass skirts. And the way that this food is written about often leaves so much left unsaid, so much on the table about the brilliance of this food. And when Ravi cooks Spam, he's not trying to make fun of it. He's not trying to do it ironically. Hawaiians love Spam. There's a lot of culinary value to Spam. And so when he wanted to recreate it himself, it was this incredible journey, again, of like alchemy, where he wanted to hit and light up all of the pleasure centers in your brain that you love if you grew up eating Spam. But he wanted to do it with a quality of pork and a balance of seasoning and a level of execution that just a food loving person of any cultural descent would appreciate and understand and love. And man, there's a lot of work that goes into those dishes, and it disappears in three bites. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a steam bun that people are like, oh, why doesn't this cost as much as a steam bun I'd get in a street cart? Well, because it takes 3 days to make beef tongue the same texture as a steam bun, which when you think about, like, if you've ever had beef tongue, to create something that you can bite through this bun, and I don't know if you ever had that bagel experience where, like, the lox shoots out the back of the bagel because the textures are so different. You got this, like, rubbery salmon. Yeah. For him to avoid that with this, like velvety, ethereal steam bun, and you bite through beef tongue, and it's got the right amount of resistance, and it tastes stupid delicious, he deserves a medal for it.
So, our exhilarating conversation with Dr. Ali Bazzari continues after this. Steve Garner along with Chef John Ash in the KSRO kitchen this morning.
Traffic on the fives. Weather six times an hour. Sonoma County's morning news with Pat Kerrigan on FM News Talk, KSRO.
Attorney Noreen Evans and her team invite you to meet the nation's leading consumer advocate, Erin Brockovich, in Sonoma on October 30th. Erin has joined the cause to do her part in holding PG&E accountable for its role in last year's wildfires. Erin Brockovich has taken on PG&E before and won. CAL FIRE reports continue to show PG&E equipment ignited many of these wildfires. Now it's up to everyone to hold PG&E accountable and make sure a tragedy like this doesn't happen again. You can meet Erin Brockovich in person to learn why she has joined the team and more about her years of fighting for consumers like you. Mark your calendars for October 30th at 5:30 p.m. at the Sonoma Valley Women's Club, 574 First Street, East Sonoma, for this free, no-obligation event. If you have any questions, please call 707-237-2445 or visit pgelawsuit.com. Noreen Evans of Watsgara LLP is the attorney responsible for the content of this commercial.
This is Vanessa Bryan with PG&E. A little preparation will make your family safer in an emergency. A week's worth of food and water, radio, flashlights, batteries, and a first aid kit will be a good start. To be prepared and learn more, visit pge.com/safety.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
Dr. Ali Bazzari joining Steve Garner, John Ash in the Chaos Arto Kitchen. Those are your house-made columns so far that have appeared in the Chronicle. When's your next one coming out and what it's going to be about, Ali?
The next one's going to come out sometime in the next couple weeks. And it's going to be actually on the first LA restaurant that we've written about so far, which is called Squirrel. It's Jessica Coslow's restaurant that is comfort brunch food from like South Asia, influenced by the Jewish diaspora, but done in a way that people cannot stop talking about.
Okay, we'll look forward to that. The cover of the summer edition of Savour, which I'm holding up, is drop-dead gorgeous, and it features sea urchins, beautiful color sea urchins, and you're the featured article about diving for sea urchins along the Sonoma Mendocino coast. There's 10 pages lavishly photographed of you in your wetsuit diving and bringing up sea urchins. What's the appeal about sea urchins? Why was it so important for you to write about this?
Well, the appeal about sea urchins is that they are fatty, savory, salty, buttery foie gras of the sea, gifted to us with very little suffering on the sea urchins' behalf. They're delicious. The beauty of that article is that right now in Northern California, I mean, specifically, I lived in Forestville for a long time, and so I would go spearfishing and diving all along the Sonoma Mendocino coast. The importance of sea urchins right now is that there's a specific purple sea urchin that is about 6,000 times more abundant in these waters than it should be. It's completely out of control population. It's not invasive. They're from here, but there's way too many of them. And a consequence of that is the kelp forests that we have along our coasts are maybe 3 or 4% are remaining from what there was just a half decade ago. And the commercial abalone fishery is already closed, maybe forever, because the abalone compete with sea urchins for food, which is the kelp. We're going to start seeing probably rockfish start to get affected next. And it's, I mean, it is the literal and metaphorical anchor of the food ecosystem here on the coast. And one of the ways that we came up with trying to help fight it is to get people really excited about eating this incredible environmental problem.
So that's the thing, eat them.
Eat
and
them.
That will help make things more in balance.
Let's start a food trend. We have a horrible history as a species of overeating stuff. Mm-hmm. Let's get some redemption and
yeah, well, it's like lionfish in
it's
Florida.
Like lionfish in Florida and Puerto Rico and all these different places. Exactly the same. Yeah. And what's interesting is purple urchins are not the ones, if you go to a sushi restaurant, that are going to be served to you. They're not the big, giant, fat tongues. They're much smaller. They're a smaller species, but they're still incredibly delicious. And in the article, in addition to talking about how you can just find these on the coast, we talk about how to cook with them. And it doesn't just have to be sushi. You can put it in just an incredibly wide variety of dishes.
And you can cook with them. You don't
you
have to eat them.
You
don't
have not to have to eat them raw. Yeah. They're butter. Use them. Yeah. Use them like butter.
We received a new cookbook this week in the KSRO kitchen. It's called Bestia, B-E-S-T-I-A, Italian Recipes Created in the Heart of L.A., by Ori Menashe and Genevieve Gurgis. I'm not sure about the pronunciation of the last name, but the book is drop-dead gorgeous. And when I was perusing it, what did I come across but this recipe? John, could you just briefly tell us what this recipe is?
Well, it's actually based, it is a traditional recipe, this pasta with sea urchin, you know, which is eaten around the Mediterranean. And that's what it is, spaghetti rusticella with sea urchin. And what it is, cook the spaghetti, take the sea urchin, you know, put some in the sauce itself and then put some on top. And there's a beautiful picture of it.
Yeah. But any home cook could make this dish, correct?
Yeah, I mean, it's
is it a good entry into the world of sea urchin, maybe doing a dish like this?
Creamy pasta is the gateway drug that we all need to start getting hooked on sea urchin. It's just swirling some sea urchin. It doesn't have to be perfectly intact. If you break one of the little lobes, taking it out of the shell, that's fine. All you do is swirl it into the base of your sauce when your pasta is almost done, and it's basically like a cream sauce. It's the exact same as adding butter to
ingredient in here that's really interesting, and that's Botarga, which they, you know, is one of those totally unknown things, I think, for most home cooks and for many chefs, too.
It's just cured fish eggs.
Yeah. delicious. There's a great resource for it in Florida, of all places. And they're just dried, and you grate them, and they're cool.
So pick up an issue of the summer edition of Savour, the Oceans and Islands issue, and look and see Ali Bazzari's article about sea urchins. You have brought some brand new beverages for us to taste.
Yes. So this is actually our other company. It's called Render. We decided to make our own in-house brand where we collaborate with our chef friends to help take some of the ideas from their restaurants. Places like State Bird Provisions in San Francisco, and these drinks have their genesis in Bar Tartine, and put them on retail shelves, put them in places like Whole Foods and Target and et cetera. So these are two lines of beverages that we created with Nick Bala and Courtney Burns, who are the co-chefs at Bar Tartine. The line that we did with Courtney is basically like a lightly sweet tonic. It is a mixture of fruit purees, spices and herbs, and repurposed dairy whey.
Okay, so, I've got to catch up.
Yep.
Okay,
and how, purpose dairy. And how does the whey figure into that?
So if you've ever had like...
why whey?
Yeah, so if you've ever like opened a container of ricotta or yogurt and the little bit of water that separates, you taste it, it's the whey. It's slightly sweet. It's a little bit acidic. It's just this tangy thing that has more flavor nuances than water. And it's getting thrown down the drain. Not literally. They need to environmentally safely dispose of it. But it's getting thrown away by dairies all over the country because they don't have anything to do with it. And we collaborated with our friends at this amazing Sonoma County dairy at Point Reyes, who are making great cheese. Mm-hmm. And they have a bunch of extra leftover whey. So we got it in big 250-gallon totes, took it to a place right here in Santa Rosa where we bought all the beverage, and mixed it with, we have one that's cranberry ginger hibiscus, one that's strawberry fennel tarragon, and another one that's blueberry juniper orange. So kind of different flavor profiles. It's for the people, if you like seltzers, but you wish that they contained food, this is that. So it's a little bit sweet, it's effervescent, it's carbonated, and it's refreshing and non-alcoholic.
Beautiful. And what's the other line?
So the other one, so the first line, the tonic is called Wayla. The second one is called Briner.
How do you spell the first one?
W-E-Y-L-A.
W-E-Y-L-A, Wayla.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the second one is called Briner, which in keeping with the name, you can guess what it contains. It's repurposed pickle brine from Dave up at Sonoma Brinery in Healdsburg. And so this is another thing. You make a barrel full of pickles. You're left over with a bunch of really salty, tangy brine, which instead of pouring it down the drain, we poured it into a bottle, along with the three flavors are smoky tomato chipotle, beet horseradish, and carrot ahi pepper, which is kind of like a Yucatan, like coastal Mexican flavor. And it's a savory brine drink. So rather than being really sweet, this is driven more by umami and saltiness and sourness.
So these are drinks that you're not just going to slug down on a hot day.
But absolutely will.
Oh, you will?
Oh, yeah.
They're not meant just for sipping.
They totally can be. Yeah, they absolutely can be. I mean, okay. this is a drink that you grab from the cold case at the grocery store, and driving around, it's refreshing, it's delicious. The savory ones, I like having a lot after exercise because I'm sweating and I need some salty savory.
Healthy?
Yeah, I mean,
but that's not what you're selling.
That's not the point. It's not meant to be health food. But what's interesting is the way that chefs cook, all of our products end up being compatible with more health-minded consumers because chefs use real food. You know, the paradigm of the 350-pound chef and jolly, you know, person who just subsists on butter is kind of no longer accurate. Most chefs are now cyclists in their free time, and they're living much more active lifestyles. So all of these beverages, we did a line of crunchy snacks with Stuart Nicole from State Bird. All this stuff is made with real food, and it tends to be lower sugar, whole ingredients, all the things that chefs do anyway. And these beverages, they're meant to be enjoyed on their own, or you can put just about any kind of booze in them that you want, from sparkling wine to mezcal. They make a great pairing.
And when are they going to be available at retail?
So we're doing a soft launch right now. They're actually in Rainbow Grocery in SF. You can also get them through Good Eggs. Our other line that we launched last fall, the State Bird Crunch, is available in Whole Foods in the Bay Area, Molly Stone's. In a very short time, we're going to be in a few different Bay Area Targets. So you're going to be seeing...
So it's a broad spectrum. This is
bringing the food from some of the country's best restaurants to the people in a way that you're just not used to seeing this stuff on those grocery store shelves.
I love this philosophy. Instead of how to get rid of something, why not just repurpose it after the manufacturing production phase is over and find another use?
Exactly. We could feed it to pigs and stuff. That's fine.
But pickle brine and whey. Who would have
known? Why not feed it to humans and have us enjoy it?
Hi, Steve and John. Ali, this guy is amazing. Great show, great energy. Marie, just an email we just got.
Well,
so you have
thank you, Marie.
Many fans. Mm-hmm. Marie represents.
At least one.
Well, it's been 45 minutes. I don't know where the time's gone. Since you're a neighbor in the Bay Area, would you come back again?
And I will come back absolutely anytime you guys want to talk.
Can you give us a little preview, or I don't know whether you can talk about things you're working on now?
Yeah. In 1 minute.
There's a little bit of everything. There's a couple of articles. There is the Housemate article, so the squirrel article we're really excited about. What is lined up right now to be the next one is going to be a Bay Area classic hallowed restaurant that you would really not associate with me getting in there and writing a nerdy science column.
You mean like House or Prime Rib?
It is part of the Bay Area canon.
Okay.
It's going to be a super cool deep dive.
Okay.
And hopefully a new chapter in the way people talk about the classic Bay Area cuisines.
Good enough. And any books on the horizon?
No books on the horizon. Okay. I'm getting into some more of the podcasting world. Okay. So there's going to be some podcast stuff going on. And we're already talking to our next round of chefs for more render products that you're going to see in your local grocery store.
It was great having you back. John Ash, we'll see you next week.
Yes, you will.
Stick around following the news at the table with Clark Wolf. I'm Steve Garner. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week and happy Halloween.